Dream. Welcome to Honda's first Dream podcast. In moments, we'll hear how Honda motorcycles are making a difference in Africa, and we'll meet a man who fulfilled his dream of becoming a rock star in 6 short months.
Some people might suggest that I was having a slightly early midlife crisis.
We'll take a peek inside the environmentally friendly home of the future, and we'll take a look at Honda's new iShift technology.
You have a manual gearbox with some electronic management.
All this, plus your chance to win an iPod. Dream. Did you know the first hybrid car was actually invented way back in 1898, and electric cabs were in use in England even before that? Well, today, Honda is leading the way with the all-new Civic Hybrid and an experimental car called the FCX. Its only emission... pure water. Well, most of us think that one of the biggest problems facing Africa is a lack of medicine, but actually the main difficulty is getting it to remote areas. Every year, Honda motorcycles are used by the charity Riders for Health for the Enduro Africa Rally. 150 people spend 14 days tackling the tough terrain to make a real difference. And organiser Simon Smith's on the line now. Simon, tell me about the challenges you'll be facing.
Mostly it's, as you'd expect, it's doing business in a wild place, a country where laws and interpretation of laws are very different to our own. The challenges obviously come from a rider perspective in terms of things like the very challenging terrain, the difficulty not only of the actual riding itself physically, but also the challenges that you face dealing with your own fears and your own doubts when you're out there riding long distance on a motorcycle somewhere like Africa.
What's it like to travel through these places, and what sort of reaction do you get from Africans?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it's wonderful to be able to go out there and earn your living having adventures. But obviously, adventures don't just mean lots of happy times. I mean, lots of real struggles and moments where you question your sanity. Riding in Africa is one of the most demanding things that you'll ever do. It's unpredictable, it's varied, and at times it can be dangerous too. So you need to just constantly prepare, constantly question the decisions that you make. But incredibly demanding environment to ride, but also a very, very rewarding one as well, because, you know, we can all sit on the sofa and watch our life go by. You know, you don't have to put any effort into that at all, but you won't get any reward from it either. So the harder we find we push ourselves on the rallies, the more rewards we get. You know, the happier we feel when we've completed it and we've donated that money to Riders for Health.
Simon, what kind of people take part in this rally? You must be mad, aren't you?
Yeah, I think that sort of being mad is a pre-qualifier to signing up. you certainly need to want something different from life. I mean, anyone can go on a holiday to Africa. To be able to come out there and, you know, A, raise the money to take part, then come out there and, you know, 90% of the people who do this thing come out on their own because they can't find any friends crazy enough to do it with them. So they come out there on their own, which is also quite a struggle for a lot of people. You know, what's it going to be like? You know, are they going to be okay? Will they get on with everyone? Blah, blah, blah. A lot of people would say, it's people that have seen the light in a way that want to get out there and see the real world and have adventures that, you know, they're more sane than maybe some of the guys who sit there working in a bank all day long, you know.
How does it change them as people? Have you seen people change?
Yeah, it's a real journey of personal discovery as well. That's the big thing for it, you know. It's constantly a reality check. People constantly come back. They might be a chief exec of IBM or a self-made billionaire or whatever. They think they've seen it all. And they come out there and they see these children that are, you know, their only toy is a ball of sellotape for a football or a bicycle tyre with a stick or whatever. And they see these children that are happier than a lot of the children here in the UK and in Europe and in the States and whatever. And they get welcomed by people that haven't got anything materially but seem to have so much more spiritually than say, people pursuing the way of life that we pursue here in the West. So it's a real reality check for a lot of people. It certainly changes... I think everyone who comes on the rally is changed. I think it's physically impossible, you know, to remain the same person once you've done it. But quite a lot of people, will actually have a life-changing experience in the fact that they come back and change the direction of their life because of it, which is a wonderful thing for me. And it's probably what keeps me organising the rallies, is to see the positive effect it has on people.
You can find out more about the rally at www.enduroafrica.com. Or if you're interested in helping the charity, just log on to www.riders.org. Did you know Honda doesn't just make motorcycles, engines and cars? Company researchers are working on everything from a robot that can jog to a strain of rice that could help feed more people. Their latest breakthrough is a thin solar panel that's cheap and easy to make. They may not feature on your next car, but it's always nice to plan ahead. Dream. Now, we all have dreams and aspirations, but what happens if the challenge you set yourself is seen by many as impossible? Well, Stephen Armstrong has been talking to music journalist Will Hodgkinson, who set himself the goal of becoming a rock star in just 6 months.
Guitar Man is a book which is about one of Will's dreams, really. It's about a dream to learn to play the guitar and ultimately to get up on stage and perform in front of a live audience. So, Will, tell us a bit about how the dream and then how the book came together.
Okay, well, the first thing was I'd reached the age of 34 and realised that I didn't know anything about music in terms of how it's made, but also I couldn't play a single note. I didn't even know what an E chord was. And this was all due to lack of confidence. You know, I always wanted to, but it's always the thing that other people did, and the kids at school, you know, my friends picked it up at 12, and then by 13 I thought I couldn't do it. So I had this idea to start learning guitar and pick up on some of the people who I'd met through the years who were extremely good guitarists who might be able to help me. So Roger McGuinn from the Byrds gave me a lesson in Florida, and Johnny Marr from the Smiths, I went up to see him in Manchester. And so it sort of became a bit of an odyssey. You know, it became as much about the guitar as this cultural tool of upheaval, and about the changes that it brought about in my life, especially with a wife and two kids. And so some people might suggest that I was having a slightly early midlife crisis, but I don't like to look at it like that.
One of the really nice bits in the book is when you go to New York to meet Les Paul. Do you want to talk us through what happens there?
Yeah, well, Les Paul is now 90. He was a jazz guitarist who invented the first solid-bodied electric guitar. He plays on a Monday night, every Monday night, in New York at a club. And I arranged an interview with him, and a good few months of trying to sort this thing out. And they said, yeah, it'll be fine. Come along to the gig, hang around afterwards, and at about midnight he'll come out and he'll chat to you. So I thought, great, that's going to be fantastic. The master, Les Paul, he's going to give me a lesson. It's going to be fantastic. So anyway, I went to the gig. It was pretty awful, to be honest with you. And I waited, and I spoke to the manager, and the manager said, yeah, get in line over there. And I saw a line of American tourists all holding Les Paul CDs. And I thought, well, I'm not buying one. So I got to the end of the line, waited for about 2 hours while he posed with every single American Midwestern tourist who turned up at the place, and listening to their conversations. It was either that or Les Mis, and they decided to go to Les Paul. And then it came to my time. I said, I'm writing this book, and I'm learning guitar, I'm going to be doing a gig in a few months' time. Could you tell me the secrets of the guitar? And he just looked at me as if I was a complete idiot and said, practice. Next! So that was my interview with Les Paul, which I travelled from London to New York to do. One word.
Did you know Honda's marine engines were used to help film the BBC's epic Planet Earth series? Using Honda's four-stroke engines, cameraman Doug Anderson got up close with whales, dolphins, piranhas, walruses and tuna, which he says are especially sensitive to noise. Honda's engines are not only quieter than other engines, but also cleaner, something both fish and people can appreciate. Dream. Whether it's recycling our bottles or driving a greener car, we're all trying to do our bit for the environment. But what about the houses we live in? The World Wildlife Fund's One Planet Living project is aiming to make a difference by building communities based on zero carbon, zero waste and sustainable water, food and transport. Simon McWhirter from the WWF joins me now to explain how the concept came about.
Because of the way we live our lives now, we need to look at many more things than just the house or where it's built and that sort of thing. I mean, it really boils down to one simple fact, which is slightly scary, but I'll not be doom and gloom for too long, which is simply that if everyone in the UK consumed natural resources and lived lives the way we do, if that was expanded across the world, we would need three planets worth of natural resources to support that sort of behaviour and lifestyles. Clearly, we don't have that. We only have the one planet. So what One Planet Living does as a concept is try to look at a framework or set of principles within which we can try and lead lives which are within the carrying capacity of the planet that we do have.
Okay, Simon, so specifically, give me an idea of what's so special about these particular houses.
You're looking at a sort of place and space issue. You're looking at where the house is and does that make sense to minimise the impact that we're having. So, for instance, is the house near transport networks? Can people take a bus or a train or a tram when they want to go and drop the kids off at the park or go shopping? You know, again, if you're looking at the sort of food systems, when people are going to do their weekly shop, do they have to jump in the car to go to Tesco's, or can they avoid the carbon miles in the car by getting a food box delivered to the house or going to a local organic farmer's market? So, you know, firstly, you're looking at the actual build of the structure. Is it energy efficient? Is it using renewable energy where efficiencies aren't enough? But also then for One Planet Living Networks, it's about much more than that. It's about, as I say, this holistic or whole life approach where we're looking at, does it respect the ecological value of the land? Does it preserve it and indeed enhance it where possible? A good example of where these ideas can interlock are green roofs, for instance, which will provide insulation to the roofs of buildings, stopping heat loss and obviously reducing energy bills in the home, but will also provide a home for an increased amount of insects on the roofs, which will lead to increased bird attracted to the roofs and lead to greater biodiversity in the area, which again leads to a much happier, healthier place to live for the people there as well. Dream.
Did you know, in Antarctica, a rescue team came across a Honda all-terrain vehicle abandoned in the snow and ice? It had been there for 3 frozen years, through temperatures as low as minus 90 degrees Celsius. After turning the key a few times, the engine sprang to life. Comforting to know when next winter's first frost arrives. Honda's launched a new technology for its Civic, but what is iShift all about? Dream has been to talk to the people who've made it happen and given existing customers the chance to experience iShift firsthand.
Hello, my name is Adam Burton. I'm product planning executive responsible for Civic. iShift is, to a layman, would be, oh, it's the automatic version of Civic, but it's a little bit different than that. Rather than just a conventional automatic, it's actually an automated manual. Now that essentially, for in basic, very basic terms, means you have a manual gearbox with some electronic management, and that gives you benefits in terms of much better fuel economy, lower emissions. You can have the option of driving it fully automatic, so you pop it into drive and just drive away nice and easy, as many customers do. But what you also have, which is different with this and different, very different to a conventional automatic, is that you have the option of driving in a manual mode.
I'm Kostas Galekis. I currently drive a Civic 1.6 Sport. It looks new. It looks like something different. I think Honda have been very bold with the design, with the ergonomics, and it will probably work. It will definitely appeal to a young driver who wants a reliable car with a good image. And I think it will open up Honda into new markets, where before some people found them a little bit too conservative, but I think definitely Honda, the research and design team must have looked into that and provided a package that will cater for everybody's needs.
The driving feel is very similar to a conventional automatic. You feel a little when the car starts to change gear, because like we say, it's at the base, it's a manual transmission with electronic management, so you feel it change up through there. But the driving sensation is still very smooth, and it's actually designed to feel even more responsive than a conventional automatic.
My name is Ray Litchfield. I currently drive a 1.6 Honda Civic Executive. The profile of the car is exceptional. The Civic has always been considered an old man's car, actually, but this isn't. This is a young man's car as well.
One point of view, it's a safety kind of thing, because your hands never have to leave the wheel, so you can concentrate a lot more on the road. But also, it's kind of almost based on Honda's kind of racing heritage and Formula One technology, and can kind of give a sportier edge to the driving feel as well.
Well, it's quite easy, actually. You just push it. You don't do anything. Same. You push it, it does it. It's simple.
Thanks for listening to the Dream podcast. Here's your chance to listen to the next edition on a brand new iPod. All you have to do is answer the following question. Where does the Enduro Rally take place? Africa, South America, or the Australian Outback? To enter, send an email with your full name and address to podcast@honda-eu.com. Competition rules can be found on page 45 of Dream magazine. Dream.